Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 259 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. And today my guest is Girija Patel. Girija is an attorney outside of Houston who primarily provides services to creative entrepreneurs, the creative market, such as photographers and wedding planners and event planners and the like. And she does so on a number of different bases, either hourly basis or fixed fee, or in some cases soon a subscription model. And we talk a little bit about her journey of how she discovered this niche and became part of it, and then decided to provide legal services to clients in that niche, all the while creating a social media presence that serves her well in the legal market. So I think there's a lot to learn from her story, and I enjoyed having this chat with her, and I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I did. So without any further delay, here is Girija Patel. Girija Patel, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for the warm welcome.
Well, I've tried very hard to get it right. How'd I do?
Oh, you did great. I actually smiled right when you said it. My name.
Terrific. Girija, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, my name is Girija Patel, and I am a lawyer in Houston, Texas. I always knew I wanted to do law. I was in middle school, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to be a lawyer. That's it. And so I thought I had my whole life planned at that time. And I kind of did until I became a mom. And then my life just kind of changed and it took a 180 all of a sudden. And I started off, I went to UT undergrad, did business. And from there, I went to law school, graduated and started off in the Houston's Harris County DA's office. I was a prosecutor for a little bit, for some years. And then from there, I got married and I started my practice. I just wanted to leave the DA's office at that time. Got tremendous amounts of experience from there. And I started my own practice. But then after I got married and then I was pregnant and I kind of left my practice at that time after I had my first child. So believe it or not, I was not practicing like actively for 6 years almost. And in between that time though, I was, of course, you know, keeping up my license, going to the CLEs, networking and whatnot, but just wasn't actively practicing. But I also, my husband has a jewelry business. So it's a family-owned jewelry business. And so they're entrepreneurs in their own right. And I come from an entrepreneur family as well. But at the time, I was helping him a lot with his marketing and events and just kind of doing all that stuff. And I got a lot of exposure to the creative industry at that time. And I started going to a lot of events where I was also chairing those events and I was inadvertently planning them and organizing them. And so with so much participation in the community, I also was able to really get a great taste of what it means to be creative and also tap into my creative side. And slowly, I just really started indulging more in that. And I was helping more in the marketing end of my husband's business as well. And I started this random Facebook group, and it was called City Tattler. And there was quite a few people that joined. And the idea was to share about your city. The idea was to share what's hot, what's not hot. If you had questions, have a live forum where you can actually discuss it and get answers. And so through that, I actually went to some blogging conference that was happening in Houston. And it was a great blogging conference. I'm really close friends with the person who organized it now. And through this blogging conference, though, I was introduced to the most beautiful community. And it's just these creative entrepreneurs that are, you know, getting together, and they're creative on such a big spectrum of industries that, you know, it could be wedding professionals, event professionals, it could be graphic designers, coaches, photographers, people who do a lot of DIY stuff, but then are selling on Etsy. I mean, just incredible group of people. And when I started telling them that, hey, yeah, I'm a lawyer, but you know, I've started this thing, they kind of just stopped listening to me and they just started focusing on the legal aspect. And it literally was a very organic way for me to kind of just step into that space now where I realized, wow, there's this huge community here that is really deficient in legal help. And there's such a huge deficit here. And I really wanted to kind of pour some love into it and support them and help them because they truly needed it. And so that was in 2016. And I, since then, have never looked back, and I've just become more and more indulged in this community of mine.
Well, I'm exhausted.
I know. I just kept going.
No.
I thought just you were going to stop me.
No, it's just so much work that you did. it's a tremendous journey, and I think it speaks to a lot of different things. So I'm gonna drill back, circle back, and drill down, and mix as many metaphors as I can into one conversation. And so, a lawyer from middle school. Okay, what in middle school attracted you to law?
There's nothing really to say it. I have no idea. I was just like, I thought I was good in debate. There was like debate in middle school and I was good at it. And I'm like, I love it. I love arguing. And so it was just one of those things that I just grew in that area. And
like
school.
A lot of people feel like it was some television show that, you know, inspired them, whether it was, you know, if you go as far back as me, is Perry Mason. You know,
oh, yeah.
Really kind of
Murder, She Wrote. Murder, She Wrote.
Or, you know, then it was L.A. Law or Boston Legal.
Awesome. You know,
a lot of these shows really stimulated people to think they wanted to go into the law. And you did that. And, you know, taking that path through the prosecutor's office, I think I did the same thing. I thought I'd be putting bad guys in jail. I figured there was no shortage of customers for that. But it's a different mindset. It's a different kind of approach to the law. There's no better training for understanding how to manage a courtroom and how to manage a docket than working, you know, in that arena, whether it's on the PD's side or the DA side, doesn't really matter. So you got a lot of experience there. But then I think just, again, it's really interesting the entire journey that you took a break from motherhood and then just really indoctrinated yourself in a whole nother space and a whole other life area. And then the opportunity revealed itself to you. You didn't have to go look for it. It was clear that this is an area. And I think just actually also timing to some extent, because I think, maybe I'm wrong here, but I think that the explosion of DIY and individual businesses really took off in, you know, 80s, 90s, you know, as the internet expanded and the opportunities expanded. So you were right, right place, the right time for that as well.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, you know, the blogging scene started 2010, 2008, sure. Around that time. That was like when the true bloggers started blogging. And they weren't blogging to monetize. They were just blogging to share with their family, hey, this is what we're doing. Check it out in one spot, rather than like us sending you a card every single time. And then through blogging, it has evolved into a monetized business now, and where influencer now existing. And now it's become influencer marketing, where you've now combined blogging with influencers, and now it's become huge. And so you're right. Like, I'm navigating myself in a very untapped legal journey, because it's really not, I'm a very non-traditional lawyer now, because I'm not in my office suited and booted and ready to go fight something in court, right? I'm here really trying to cultivate my clients' legal foundation and help them understand why it's important. And I also feel like my marketing is very different than what a traditional legal practice would be also. And it's really something I built from ground up, ground zero, because I really didn't know what I was doing. I just did it. And you know, the more I do it, the more I realize what I need to do. And I also realize that was a terrible idea, or that was awesome. Let's do it again. And so it's really, you know, a lot of hit or miss, trial and error. And yeah, I kind of fell into it. It was something, an opportunity that came my way and something that was very organic. It wasn't something I was really running, you know, like striving for or pining after. It just kind of fell in my lap. And it's been really nice. I really love working with, you know, the community that I have. They love their businesses. They're very passionate about it. And it's really helpful because I truly feel like I'm making an impact in them and their business and their lives.
Now, sadly, it's also a segment of the economy that was hardest hit during the pandemic.
Yeah, a lot of them were, especially in the event.
Planning, you know, wedding area space, photographers, caterers, florists, you name it.
Right.
They were all crushed during the pandemic. How have you been able to cope through that process?
Yeah, it's been a lot of, it's been a lot of education. So my platform is based on education because I feel like a lot of my, target audience, to say it, lack of a better way of, you know, talking about them, they need to be educated on why they need law, why they need protection. Because a lot of times what happens is as an entrepreneur, you just want to go and do what you love. You don't care about all the other stuff. You don't care about the accounting. You don't care about the law. You don't care about the foundation as much because you assume it's going to be fine. And you're always assuming the best until,
The worst happens.
Until the worst happens. Yeah. And so what I've done is, especially last year, I felt like I didn't want to just sell because I feel like they don't even know what they need right now. So if somebody doesn't know what they need, how can they buy? So you have to actually go in and educate them on why they need it, where the holes are, and how you can fix it. And so when the pandemic happened, or it's still going on, but now it's like a different era of the pandemic, for lack of a better way of explaining that. But when it first hit, everyone was like, oh my gosh, how do we handle these contracts? How do we handle these cancellations? How do we handle these rescheduling? And then what's force majeure? What? Who said that? What is that word? And so all these things I had to like, I took my platform and, you know, I'm on Instagram, I'm on YouTube, I'm wherever I was, I got on there and I just shared tremendous amounts of knowledge. So that one, they felt confident in knowing that you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. We just have to find a way to make you fine. And then number two, this is what all these words mean. And this is what you have, like your options are when someone comes to you and says, hey, I need to cancel, or hey, I need to do this. These are the ways you can handle it. And then, you know, I had clients who were pre-existing and then new clients also that were like, hey, we need help. And of course, you know, as a one-on-one level, I help them navigate through all of that as well.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, like so many other practice areas, the educational model, I think, is the paramount approach to communicating with the public as to what you can do and how you can help people. You know, we've said this many times on this podcast that, you know, there are some practice areas that are event or condition stimulated. You had a car accident. You know, you need an attorney. You served with divorce papers, you need an attorney, and the like. But for a lot of these creatives, as you said, educating them as to what they need is the first step in determining that you can help them. And it is, you know, a process whereby you provide that value without expectation, but knowing that there's going to be a reciprocal response if what you provide is valuable enough to the people that you're providing it to.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's true for a lot of other, my practice area, estate planning, very similar, elder law, very similar approach, even real estate at times, a condition of educating the public as to why they need your services and what you can do for them, how you can make life better for them.
Exactly. And plus it's, you know, I get the number one question even on, you know, I'm really active on social media just because that's where my target audience is. That's where my people are. And so the number one question I see all the time is, well, where do we start? How do we know what to fix? Yeah. And that should just be so eye-opening because that just shows that I can talk about a contract all day long and someone may just not understand it because they don't even know how it applies to them. And so it's literally very basic level education and freely and abundantly sharing information with your community without the feeling of, I need, you know, become a client of mine or give me money for this. And I truly adhere to that because I've also learned that from this community as well, from the creative community, that, you know, it's a rising tide. You rise together when you go, you know, the more you share, the more you're building each other up. And then, you know, inadvertently, you're creating great goodwill for your business. You're also creating great relationships and people trust you. And a lot of times lawyers get this bad rap of not being trusted, that they're just kind of like, you know,
a lot of times.
Yeah.
All the time.
All the time. Yeah. But, you know, my goal is to like change that. I want to change the way people view law. I want to change the way they not only integrate it into their business, but also embrace it. It's part of your business. You can't run away from it. But what you can do is embrace it and become confident about it. And so that's literally my goal with my community is, hey, I'm your friend. I am here to make you better and make you more confident as a CEO of your business.
And while this is true for these small creative businesses, such as ones you're serving, it's also, you know, true for any type of small business, mm-hmm. small or medium business. A lot of them started off is either hobbies or labors of love. It's just something people did because they enjoyed it and found out they were good at it. More people wanted to experience what they were doing. And so they started sharing it with folks. And one thing leads to another. And pretty soon, they've got a thriving little business going on. But they've not thought at all about actually creating a legal entity or a business or doing the 10 things that they really ought to do to protect what they now have. And so a lot of times they've just grown into this situation and you're there to, you know, help address that.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't really matter if you're a 1 to 3 year business owner or whether you're a 10 year business owner or even a 15, you know, year business owner. It just doesn't matter because sometimes you don't even realize you need that legal help until sometimes the event arises, like how you were saying earlier, that it triggers the need. And I do believe that in at least with business law, you can be proactive. And you can then, by being proactive and preempting certain situations, you can mitigate or altogether eliminate certain issues that might arise in the future. And so that's the kind of, that's what I'm trying to get my clients to do and or my community, not just my clients.
Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. For many years, marketing companies have focused on funnels that run for a short time, often leaving dozens of leads behind that didn't make a decision yet. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. It's called a content loop, and it's changing the way attorneys think about their marketing. This system nurtures your leads in perpetuity with quality evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing actually work. If you're interested in learning more, head over to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, to learn more about the content loop and how it can revolutionize your law firm's marketing. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher return on investment. Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. So how does the client journey work with your practice? How do they start? We talked about it being the first question is, where do we start? Mm-hmm. From a client perspective, their journey in working with your law firm, how do you manage that relationship?
My relationship is truly I cultivate it at every single point. So whether it's during the time when they first call me for their discovery call, where it's complimentary on my end and I sit down with them, I kind of figure out what their legal needs are. Then I give them like a little roadmap of what I think they should do or, my suggestions. And then from there, if they choose to obviously use my one-on-one services, legal consulting, then, I do the whole onboarding process with them. And now my onboarding process is, I don't know how other lawyers do it or law firms do it, but mine's kind of mimicking what this community does already, because that's who I'm speaking to. So I want my verbiage and I want my methodology to be somewhat of what they're used to. Yep. And also what makes sense to them. And so I'll send them documents for them to fill out in advance before we have our next meeting. I'll send them all this, long email telling them the steps that we're going to be taking, so they know, they have an outline of what to expect and the timeline of how things might be getting done. And so they know that I'm on top of it. And they also know that if they have questions, I'm always available. Send me an email. Send me, I'm there. I'm going to talk to you. I'll meet you when you need to meet me. And so my journey is it's very different. I try to create that client experience by creating that relationship with them, because I know that's what matters to them. What matters to them is that relationship and the trust.
Are most of these clients then, are they using your services on an hourly basis, or is it on a per product flat fee basis or a subscription model? What approach do you take?
So currently I have two models. One is flat fee, and then one is the traditional hourly basis. My traditional hourly basis are for some of my bigger clients who require more work on a regular basis. And then that's what I suggest, as opposed to just, hey, can you write this contract for me? And then that's a flat fee. I am developing a subscription model as well, because that's what makes sense for my community. Yeah. And so my ideal client loves stuff like that. And so that's something that I'm going to be pushing out in March as well.
Yeah, I would think that very much is the case, because creative vendors like that are used to people subscribing to their services. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So they treat law in the same fashion. And so the degree to which you can kind of figure out how to do that, I think it's going to be well worth your while. What role does automation play in helping you create those relationships? You do a lot of email work, you do a lot of scheduling work and face-to-face work with your clients. What are some of the tools for automating that process that you use?
Right. So some of the things that I use are some of the basic stuff. I use ConvertKit for my automation for my emails, not for my one-on-one clients, but more for I have a one-on-one GVP law. That's what I do. Legal consulting, super curated type of legal consulting. And then I have Your Contract Buddy, which is a contract template shop online. And that's where I've created templates and people can buy it from there. And then I have, of course, my platform of lots and tons of free resources. Now, whenever somebody downloads or opts in for one of those free resources, then there's automatic, nurture sequences going out through ConvertKit. Okay. And a lot of people sometimes use MailChimp or some other programs as well. Mm-hmm. And then even the same thing with Your Contract Buddy. Now, if I'm, speaking at an event or something like that, then of course there's a whole nother set of nurture sequences going out there. And what I mean by nurture sequences are like email sequences that are going out with the users. And they are now getting 5 or 6 emails, depending on how I've scheduled them for that particular type of opt-in.
And you're segmenting your lists. So these email sequences go to different list segments depending on what their needs are.
Absolutely. So say like, for example, somebody downloads my essentials of a contract. And so if they take that free opt-in, then I might have three emails that go in after that. The first, well, four actually. So the first email would be the downloaded, you know, freebie that I've given. And then plus just a, hey, thank you for doing this, blah, blah, blah. And then the second email that would go out would be just a, how was it? Did it serve you well? Here's another freebie that might interest you. And it's kind of like related to whatever they downloaded.
Of course.
So that's just how it goes. So you're kind of reminding them of who you are. You're also just saying, thank you. I don't really push product or push my services. I don't love to do that. I just want to say, hey, I'm here.
And you let them know what you have to offer.
Yeah, exactly. I let them know what I have to offer.
At the appropriate and opportune time. And really, that is the key.
Yeah, that is the key. The key is to be able to remind them of who you are, remind them that they downloaded something from you, remind them of all the services that you could offer or that the things that they might need. And that's another opportunity for you to also tell them, hey, this is how I can help you and this is where you might need help. Let me tell you how you might need help. Just kind of remind them again.
Now, how about in terms of managing your time? Because, well, first off, let's kind of circle back. What's your staffing like?
So I am a one lawyer show right now.
Yeah, so I thought, right? So
I am looking to hire. I'm a true solo.
But you also use some services, right?
Absolutely.
Virtual assistants.
I have two virtual assistants, actually. One that does all of my, you know, client, like one of my PR work, kind of sending out, you know, collaboration requests, managing and helping me manage my podcast requests as well. You know, it's just all the different things that I do. And then also just managing my calendar. And then I have another social media VA that I have who helps with just scheduling and graphics and designing and getting all of my, you know, my lead magnets get, you know, putting that together. So I create all my content. I'm pretty big. I'm very particular about it because one is the law. I don't want to be giving out wrong information. And I also don't want to put that in the hands of somebody who just may not know it. Mm-hmm. And so I give tons of information to my, you know, my VAs to like, hey, this is the type of stuff that I want to put out. Then they'll just take it and make it look pretty and make it look nice. And then I also have my podcast manager as well. And so I manage that way right now. I am, you know, hoping to expand this year and to kind of add in some more associates to my team.
Interesting. How do you communicate and keep everybody on the team working in the same direction?
Oh my gosh. I use Trello. I love Trello. And I also use Asana. And these are both team management, project management tools out there. I personally like Trello more just because I like the aesthetics of it. I like the interface of it. Asana is great also. And I think Asana is good when you're working with multiple people at one time. So I have both of them. And I have different things on both of them that I manage.
CRM, I think Trello is specifically appropriate for your type of practice. You know, be it, you know, your contract buddy or some of your other, you know, service related offerings where you, for those of you who don't know, Trello is a Kanban style project management platform that uses the card metaphor and you move the card from one column to another as the project moves towards completion. And I think visually and systemically that feels like it fits really well with your practice.
It fits well with me. My practice uses Asana as well. And if that fits really well with something, Asana is great for managing my podcast guests and all the stuff that, you know, the list that we have with them and the steps that we take with that. And Trello is great for brain dumping. And then also for me managing the stages that my clients are in as well. I like to do it on Trello. It has checklists and my type A personality, it gets so much satisfaction from just checking off.
Hitting that check button, right?
Oh my gosh, it is next level.
That's your little dopamine hit. Ka-ching, ka-ching, right?
Oh, it makes me so happy. And then even just shifting the card to the next.
Yep.
The next column is just like, oh, that was awesome. So
Yeah,
Trello is amazing. I personally love it. And you know, you can obviously customize it and make it however you want it to appear.
Do you do anything more elaborate in terms of task management beyond that? Either
not right now.
Or business related?
No, I think that the more elaborate is just Asana, which is similar to Trello, but it's meant for bigger teams.
Right.
And that's where all of my team members come together. So I have a coach as well, and I've kind of added her to everything I do as well. And so she is on that Asana as well. And so that way you can kind of see the bigger picture for the bigger projects that I have.
Right. And how about your billing and finance management? What are you doing in that area?
Oh gosh. So billing and for lack of a better, because it's called a CRM, but I'm using Clio right now. I don't know if I love it. I don't know if I don't love it. I'm just kind of like in the middle of this right now.
Okay.
If you know something better, please let me know. I do use Clio though. I haven't really gone into the depths of it to know how to like really use it for automation yet. And that's my fault. I haven't had the time to do it. And so that's just something I really need to work on and figure that out. Because once I can get that done.
Clio is a very robust platform. And
it is.
Frankly, it could replace large parts, both Trello and Asana. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't suggest doing that if the other two are giving you what you need and they're working well and it works the way your brain thinks, you may be trying to fit a square peg in a round hole with Clio. Sounds like though that you're using it primarily for the billing function. And if that's the case, there may be other solutions. Not that I would want you to walk away from Clio because they're a great friend of the program. And I spent a lot of time going to their conferences and supporting them. But on the other hand, you know, you got to use what works for you.
Right.
So, all right. Sounds like that's an area that you may want to be exploring in 2021.
Yeah. I enjoy Clio. I think what I really need, I mean, I've gone to their conferences, I've done, you know, all that stuff, but what I really need to do is really tap into it more. And I think that's what happens when you have so much on your table.
Yep.
And when you are a solopreneur, it's tough to tap into everything and indulge in it.
Well, not only that, when you have these really capable platforms like Trello and like Clio, it takes some effort to exploit all of their features. And I think I read somewhere, whether a Microsoft study or something, or somebody studying people who use Microsoft, said that in terms of word processing, lawyers are only getting about 50% of the value out of the word processor that they use because they never take the time to learn all the features. And that's true for any platform.
Right, right. And I see that because you're busy. There's a lot that you're doing already.
Well, speaking of busy, let's talk about it. I mean, you've talked about being an educational resource and being on all these social media platforms and providing that education. Is that your primary form of marketing or do you use some other more direct or specific marketing efforts?
You know, I did a little bit of Facebook ads and Instagram ads. I didn't love it. I like the organic way of marketing right now. I truly feel that when you put yourself out there, you're connecting. So
kind
when
I make with who you are better, right?
And it fits with who I am better, exactly. Yeah. Like I really connect well one-on-one. I connect well with when I go and I'm speaking in conferences, when I'm, talking into someone's Facebook Live.
When you talk to people long enough about these kinds of things, you can almost predict who's a Facebook person, who's a pay-per-click type person, who's a social media person, because you can get a feel for what works best for them. And clearly that's right in your wheelhouse.
I guess so. I do have to work hard on it sometimes, especially when it comes to Instagram and then all the different things that keep adding on. Like, you know, there are actually quite a few attorneys on TikTok, which is,
it is what it is, and
it's great, but they use that and then they put it on their Instagram. And while I don't do TikTok, but I do reels on Instagram because that's what makes the algorithm work. But it's tough because it takes extra time out of my day to do that. So then I have to really like be very intentional about it and also batch a lot of my work during the week. So I spend some time where I'm just focusing on creating videos. And then also with my podcast, you know, having my podcast days where I'm recording and then also content creation. That is just it's a lot of work in addition to client work.
And let's circle back to a couple of things here. I want to just double check. Do you still have your City Tattler Facebook group going?
I do, but I'm not very active on it, but people are.
People are. Other people are, right?
It's like the funniest thing, yeah.
That's interesting. And tell us a little bit about your podcast. As a fellow podcaster, how'd you get into doing podcasting? And I'm lucky enough to have been a guest on your podcast.
Yes, yes,
you were. Which was a lot of fun. Tell me
you were the first guy on my podcast.
I did happen to notice that, but I don't like to kind of brag.
No, it was wonderful. So, you know, last year, before the pandemic or anything, one of my goals for last year was to actually get a, I wanted to do on YouTube where I have a video interview style where I'm interviewing entrepreneurs. And the idea is mentorship through storytelling. And so I created Law Chat with Girja. And Law Chat essentially started off as IGTV videos on my Instagram account. And a lot of them were just real quick, you know, 10-minute videos on this is what this means, how to do this, or the top five things you should have in a contract, or, you know, things like that. And then I had this idea, and my team was just kind of like, well, this is a great idea, but don't just leave it to YouTube videos. Make a podcast out of it too. So because you're already recording the audio and the video, might as well kill two birds with one stone. I'm like, okay, that's a great idea. So then I was recording all through the summer. And in September, I launched Law Chat with Girja podcast. And so that's how that dream or that vision and goal that I had in the beginning of the year became a reality in September of last year.
Well, that's fantastic. We'll keep after it. I've listened to, I wouldn't say all of them, but most of them, most of the episodes, because there's so much value there. And I think you got a lot to offer. So I wish you the best with that. You'll be happy to know that we are recording this episode, episode 259, the day after the 5-year anniversary of this podcast.
Oh, wow. So, congratulations.
Yeah. So there's something to be said for just keep doing it. Just keep creating the content. More good things flow from it.
When you're saying just keep doing it, I completely agree with you. You know, when I first started, it's sometimes, even now, like sometimes when you're starting something or launching, an idea, sometimes you don't get the traction you want and you want to, and you just want to, you get deflated. And sometimes you feel like, gosh, why am I doing this? I have so many other things I'd rather be doing. But then you just have to keep showing up. You just keep showing up. You keep showing up on your videos. You keep showing up on your marketing. You keep showing up for your community, especially when they need it most. And eventually that is what builds your empire or your business or you as a CEO.
You know, I had that point driven home to me really explicitly this week too, not just with my own podcast, but I'm also a fledgling guitar player. Maybe a little more than fledgling, but I have a online instructor that serves the rest of the country, activemelody.com, if anybody's wondering. And the videos are really polished, produced videos. They're great. And I went back and I looked at some of his earlier work, and it was horrendous. But so if you had asked, you know, 10 years ago when he was producing videos on how to play the guitar, with this guy was going to make it as a video guitar instructor, he'd say, I don't know, it's pretty rough around the edges. And now look, just by showing up every week, as you say, producing those videos, he's now got a very polished product. And the same is true with producing videos for your law firm. If that's something you decide to do, just get it done. I've said the hardest thing is turning the camera on. I'm the first one to admit that. I kept the camera off for a long time because I didn't like how I looked on the other side of the lens. But, you know, just keep showing up. Just keep producing that content and think good things will happen.
Exactly. I agree.
Yeah. Well, Girja, this has been fabulous. Tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything you've had to share or offer.
Yeah, I am available everywhere as GBP Law, Instagram, Facebook, and also GBP@GBPlaw.com. So if you want to reach out with an email, I love to say hi. I love to connect. So don't be shy.
We'll let everybody know that and we'll put it in the show notes. And if you do contact Girja, remind her that you heard about it on The Law Entrepreneur, where we thank you for being a guest today.
Thank you for having me, Neil.
Thank you so much. Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.